Hi everyone, welcome to Baby Steps Nutrition, a podcast that focuses on nutrition, health, and wellness for families of children of all ages and stages. I'm your host, Argavon Neil Forouche, a pediatric dietitian and mom of two young children. My goal is to bring you impactful information that you can apply every day in a simplified, practical form to make life easier. Now let's get into today's conversation. Deirdre Pizzaferrato is a registered dietitian and licensed nutritionist and founder of Nutrition Nanny, a solutions-driven platform dedicated to empowering caregivers and pediatric providers to combat childhood and adolescent obesity. Her previous experience includes being a medical advisory member and director of protocol innovation for Ideal Protein, and the director and owner of the Ideal Way Weight Loss Center in Massachusetts. She graduated magna cum laude from St. Joseph University with a Bachelor of Science in Nutrition Sciences and holds certification in training adult and child adolescent weight management. Deirdre is a mom to three almost grown children. Welcome, Deirdre. I'm so excited to have you on here.
Thank you, Argavan, and honored to be here. Thank you.
And as you know, September is National Childhood Obesity Month, so this is the perfect opportunity for us to be having this conversation.
Absolutely.
I want to first start with your backstory, because I love to ask that question. As a registered dietitian and licensed nutritionist, your focus and life's mission has been child and adolescent weight management and being an advocate for childhood obesity. Why has this been the case? Why is this so important to you?
I really believe that early life experiences can help shape our path in life. And I think that was definitely the situation with me. I grew up in the 70s and 80s. That's, you know, my childhood and adolescence. And back then, childhood obesity wasn't a thing. It certainly wasn't where it is today. I think it was roughly 5% of kids had it. And that was 1 in 20 kids. And I was that 1 in 20 kid. So I grew up with that struggle. And back then, we didn't have things like BMI screenings at the pediatrician's office. But we did have really mean kids that obviously never failed to point out the obvious. And, you know, being a young child, you want to fit in with your peers. You don't want to be the outlier. And so at around the age of 7, I started going with my mom to Weight Watchers. And I know it seems kind of crazy to say that now because putting kids on diets, but it was the 70s, you know, we didn't wear seatbelts and we drank from garden hoses. So kind of anything went. But, yeah. But I was indoctrinated into diet culture at a very young age. And what I mean by diet culture, it's more the notion that we're always going on a diet and that maintaining that weight loss, despite your best intentions, was a Herculean effort. And so, I just can remember that. I remember being so conflicted between my goals and what I wanted. I wanted to be at this weight, or I wanted to stay on my diet, willpower. And conflicted between that and a pint of ice cream that was in the freezer. And I knew at that young age that there's something about food that had a control over me. And I didn't like it. I wanted to know, you know, what was this? Because until I could figure it out, I couldn't really address it. And I didn't, you know, you don't trust yourself if you can't kind of figure that out. So I think in a lot of ways, yes, that definitely steered me down the path to becoming a dietitian. But I'll be honest, and maybe you can relate to this, despite all the knowledge I learned about human nutrition, that was still not answered for me. I still didn't understand what drives behavior, because when I went to school anyway, we didn't talk about the brain's role in food selection or in weight management. So I kind of took that on myself. I've been a student, a self-driven, my own student of learning neurobiology, metabolism over a decade and a half. So slowly these pixels started forming to this really complicated puzzle. But what really did it for me was a deep dive in evolutionary biology. That's when all the light bulbs went on, and that's when it just made sense. And it overlapped with, you know, obviously having kids and how I became an advocate in the space. And it's really because obesity is so preventable. It is so preventable. And it's not. I really just felt that if we could help kids by empowering them with why they make the choices they do, to raising a healthier generation.
Yes, 100%. And I too am a child of the 80s. And now obesity, you know, we have to take statistics kind of with a grain of salt, but they're definitely showing this alarming trend. Mm-hmm. And that it has tripled since the 80s, which mm-hmm. is crazy. And as you and I, and you just spoke to that as well, having gone through school, it seemed simple on paper, you know, just focus mm-hmm. on diet and exercise. And we know that it has actually become a complex. It's solvable, mm-hmm. yes, but we need to be looking at other factors. And we're going to be talking about some of those today. Just curious where you got the title of the nutrition nanny from.
Well, you know, I think, you know, a nanny is someone or is a caregiver that just, that lends support, that provides help in areas of need for parents. And it's just a perfect, I thought, a perfect name for developing programs and products and tools that do just that for parents and caregivers. So as much as I'm an advocate for children, I'm also a huge advocate for parents as well. They definitely need more support.
Yes. And as we know with children, you're speaking to the entire family and all the caregivers, mm-hmm. especially with the younger children.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
And Deirdre, so, you know, I know well, parents are really overwhelmed with just mm-hmm. the amount of information out there, the pressure that's being put on them, both from society themselves. And mm-hmm. I think there's the intention to be a conscious consumer. And we can talk about the definition of what that is. But we've also seen, as we mentioned, these alarming trends that we really need to be paying attention to. So yes, there are things that are happening with our lifestyles, mm-hmm. our home environments. So we are seeing this link to these alarming statistics. Can you speak on that, of what is happening? What has changed in the last several decades?
Yeah, I mean, that right there is, that's, you know, that's the question. But I mean, you know, it's ironic that we do live in this information age, but it's almost too much information. And there's just not enough guidance. And I think so many things have come together to form this perfect storm. You know, we have, the food industry, of course, you know, and their influence. We have just, you know, day-to-day living. You know, we have, dual parent working households. We have, you know, single parent. So time is something that's never been more of a factor than it is right now. And to make, you know, our life easier, you know, big industries understand that. They understand how our brains are wired. They understand our evolutionary biology really well, and they make a lot of money off of it. And, you know, we are kind of wired to kind of take the path of least resistance. So, you know, I think there's so many contributing factors. Most definitely is, you know, again, the way our foods are made and the way that our foods are marketed. We've allowed food makers to be our educators. And until that changes, and until we start some major paradigm shift in, you know, the whole, you know, the whole process of healthy habit learning, I'm afraid it's going to stay this way. And it's just going to continue to get worse, because, you know, we assume that, you know, once we have kids, parents all of a sudden know how to eat and they know how to raise healthy eaters. It's a lot of pressure on parents. You're absolutely right. So, you know, it really starts with the parents and empowering them with the knowledge about their own bodies and their own biology, rather, and how, you know, how it relates to their, you know, with their diet and their current relationship with food. And then it broadens outward to the family, to the children.
Yes. And I think this is where, as nutrition professionals, sometimes people think we can make things too complicated. We could talk about functional foods or superfoods mm-hmm. or certain mm-hmm. supplements, but really it's also getting back to the basics of good sleep, right? Good nutrition, sitting down, slowing down, the mindful eating aspect, just having mindfulness in your day, the quality of time that you spend with in your household, the people that you surround yourself with, the power of community, and all of those things I feel are so undervalued because they're not making those headlines. But it really comes down to those things too. And that's kind of what I try to put out there with messaging.
Absolutely. I agree. There's so much pressure on parents. And look, I mean, I'm a parent, and I used to say, do as I say, not as I do, because it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, we all have our best intentions, but life just gets really busy. In my situation, I had twins, and right out of the gate, I had all these great plans of, they're going to just, play with wooden toys and, eat organic food. And I was working, I was juggling, and, then I got pregnant with my daughter, and all of a sudden, my kids are snacking around the clock. I'm driving through the drive-through, and I mean, it fell down on the job, literally. It's how insidious it is. It's how easy it is to kind of fall into these traps. I call them parenting traps. And that's really when I had my wake up call, this isn't really going to plan, So I had to, obviously strategize, all of these little behaviors that my toddlers were starting to develop, and kind of figure out a way through it.
Yeah. And something I've noticed now with the increased influence of social media, especially on adolescents and teens, but I'll just be out there and I can tell a lot of the choices, a lot of the decisions and things, like, for example, the teenagers are ordering are based on the TikTok influence. And so I'm so well aware of that now and how crazy that influence is on them. And sometimes, they're on their own, independent with a friend without the parental influence around. And it's strong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's huge. And, don't forget, we have things now like Uber Eats and DoorDash. Again, these industries understanding how we're hardwired. We evolved over millions of years with really one common threat, and that was food, availability of it and our access to it. So, we selected these traits and systems always to make those processes easier to find food, or easier to, to overconsume it. And all of these systems in our brains and in our body are really designed around that. It was never intended for us to be in our current food environment with a drive-through window, or now, DoorDash, where you literally don't even have to get up to make change. I mean, we have really, become this, we're devolving in a sense, because these evolutionary, once very beneficial traits, are now evolutionary mismatches. And here's the thing: how can we work around them when nobody understands they even exist? So that's really the background of Nutrition Nanny. It's really about understanding how we're wired and understanding the benefits that it once served, because it's fascinating, but it also just makes sense of things. And it also takes that sort of self-blame, that self, doubt out of the equation, because, we're hardwired.
Mm-hmm. And so before we get into statistics, because that's something that I love to dive deep into, for the listeners, I'd love for you to explain. So we know BMI, body mass index, but we also know there's a specific definition that is related to overweight and obesity when we're talking about children. So children, when they go to the pediatrician's office, they are on a growth chart. So you can tell by where your child is plotting on the growth chart where they fall based on BMI. So 5th to 85th percentile being a healthy weight. Overweight being 85th to 95th, and then over 95th percentile is defined as obesity. And like you said, yes, there's now extreme obesity.
Yes. Intervention, intervening on that, it's really the ideal, setting for that is a pediatrician's office, because you know, it's really, you know, aware of the child is, you know, monitored, you know, yearly. So it really, there's so much opportunity there.
Absolutely. And hopefully, you know, the value of the dietitian. And so being able to have someone, a family, work with a dietitian if needed and to intervene ideally as soon as possible.
Also point out that with adults, and we're talking about, you know, obesity and BMI, it's different with children because you have different age groups. So for example, like, you know, in a five-year-old is, you know, 18.2 to 21.8, that would be, you know, classified as obese. But, you know, older kids, you know, it just varies according to, you know, each age group.
Absolutely. And that's, again, where you work closely with your pediatrician to see how well your child is growing and thriving. Deirdre, let's dive right into those statistics. So in your experience, what have you seen with age of onset, health risks, the impact on long-term health?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, you know, when I grew up, childhood obesity was, you know, 5%. Today, that's grown to 22%. So it's quadrupled in these, you know, since my childhood, and it's terrifying. It's a terrifying trajectory because there was a study out of Harvard in, I think it was 2018. It was a prospective study. So they were looking at if the current trends are not interrupted, you know, where will, you know, kids be, you know, and today's generation be at the age of 35. And what they found was that if this current trend isn't interrupted, that I think it was 67% of kids today will have obesity by the age of 35. And that is terrifying. Just for some perspective, roughly 42% of adults have obesity today. So, you know, that's just completely unsustainable. And, you know, it's in, again, we haven't been able to slow that. In fact, you know, in this study was done when obesity rates were, I think, 18.7. It was in 2018. And then, you know, one pandemic later, and you know, that has risen to 22%. So that's a decade's worth in 18 months when they closed the schools. And we saw that, you know, obesity rates just got out of control with kids. So, you know, that actually accelerated this crisis. And it is a crisis. I mean, we need to, you know, we need solution.
Mm-hmm. That's actually exactly when we saw the snacking, overconsumption, and reduced physical activity as well.
Yeah, you know, that was a huge problem. And pediatricians, they're completely overwhelmed right now. I always said, you know, they are the perfect agents of change if we want to, you know, turn this ship around, if you will, because, you know, again, they have that relationship with the child from birth. They have a trusting relationship with parents. Parents trust them. The challenge, of course, has always been pediatricians, you know, they don't have the tools. They don't have the they don't have the time, to be honest. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot. But, you know, again, that's where dietitians come into play. But in terms of just the system, you know, we have developed Nutrition Annie. We've developed a NutriBlock system that actually through it's, you know, by using the guidelines, USDA guidelines, children are, you know, presented with their annual, you know, nutritional NutriBlocks. So they learn how many blocks of protein, how many blocks of fat, how many blocks of carbohydrate they need to, you know, support a healthy growth. And again, they're guidelines, but they're just a little bit more specific, a little bit more, individualized. Well, a lot more individualized actually than the current dietary guidelines, which, you know, no one even knows how to understand that. And it's helpful for parents, especially. So.
And I love that you said the word individualized, because we know it's not a one size fits all, especially when working with individuals. There are so many different factors that are going on. And if we're not customizing treatment to that particular individual, taking into those multitude of factors, it probably in the long term is not going to have as great of an impact.
I completely agree. Yep. And, you know, and also system of, you know, tracking that and you know, knowing when BMI takes a different path, or, you know, it's trending in a direction that isn't great. What are the mechanisms in place right now of intervening in you know, helping that child to reverse course, so to speak? And again, you know, this it's all part of what we do at Nutrition Nanny, but you know, it's in terms of just creating a whole new system of how are we going to catch this, you know, the tail of this, you know, this dragon. It has to start somewhere, and it really starts with primary prevention and, you know, early life.
Yes, and part of the primary prevention early life is parents to be role models for their children, because we know children just don't learn these things on their own. They're looking to adults. If we want to start in the home, just starting with small changes, how do we start that conversation? How do we start becoming positive role models for our kids when it comes to healthy behaviors?
Well, I think, you know, with parents, you know, I know we touched upon this, you know, it's, you know, parents are put in this situation where they're the agents of change in terms of, you know, raising healthy eaters. And it's assumed that, you know, as soon as you become a parent, all of a sudden, you know how to eat, you know how to feed your child. And that's just not the case. Intentions are there, but, you know, 3/4 of American adults struggle with their weight. They either have pre-obesity or have obesity. So, you know, when I work with families, if they come to me because of a child or eat for whatever reason, the first thing we work on are the parents. Are the parents' relationship with food, helping them to understand the impact of their biology and their environment. You know, again, that education really, you know, trickles out, because when parents understand it, they can then teach it to their kids. It's kind of like, you know, when you grab the oxygen mask in a plane, you know, you have to, you know, you have to be that, you know, the one that's setting that example. And role modeling is, you know, it's a huge part of that. It's so important, and it starts so much earlier than most even realize. It starts in utero. It starts with mom's diet. No pressure there. I know it's like, oh, you know, but it's true. You know, it's what mom eats. That's an evolutionary adaptation too. And it was really beneficial for, you know, getting that baby used to flavors of its environment. So, you know, but here's the thing, you know, it's what's mom eating. So that's really, you know, a huge area of intervention right there is, you know, that whole, you know, perinatal window. It's so crucial. It's, you know, it really all, you know, all signs are pointing to that area for primary prevention, for, you know, metabolic programming and really working with pregnant mothers, you know, preferably before, but definitely during and immediately after, because her diet really does program so many parts of her baby's future metabolism, food preferences, eating habits, you know, all of that.
Mm-hmm. And then what I love about the work that you do, Deirdre, is it's science driven. So if you can just, speaking of science, why are we so driven to, or we can use the word addicted, to foods that are high in sugar, fat, and salt? What is it about those particular foods and palatability that makes us crave those foods all the time?
Mm-hmm. And you know, I always, you know, when I educate families, I always put it into the metaphor of cave, of our caveman, you know, ancestors, because it makes the most sense. And again, I, you know, as I said earlier, we evolved with this constant fear of finding enough food and survival. And we didn't have things like, you know, refrigerators or, you know, Tupperware. So, you know, we had really, you know, for the most part, we had no way of storing food. So we really had to maximize our capacity to store energy. So there's a lot of interesting parts to this that it makes great sense. You know, we had to walk miles to find food. On average, you know, our ancestors walked 3 to 5 miles a day, and food wasn't always guaranteed. So when they got there, you know, they had to, you know, get the most bang for their buck, so to speak. And so we did evolve a system of reward. So for example, you know, and these are, you know, rewarding foods that were the most crucial. So, you know, energy, calories, and you know, fat sources, glucose. We need, you know, some glucose, you know, absolutely, you know, required for life. So things like fruit and honey, but availability of these foods, you know, they weren't ever guaranteed. And if so, we had things like, you know, obstacles such as, you know, seasons and, you know, again, so it was such an unsure environment. That we have these incredibly sophisticated systems that literally dragged us out of a cave and to walk 5 miles. And that system is controlled, or it's like, call it the conductor of this incredible orchestra of hormones and chemicals. And that's dopamine. A lot of people think dopamine is the feel good chemical, but it's really not. It's actually the chemical that gets you to that feel good, that gets you to that end point of repeating these pleasurable experiences. It's really all about motivation and education. And we evolved with such precision. So things like looking at, say, I was say with my clients, like, you know, maybe it was a certain tree or, you know, whatever triggered a memory, boom, that happens below our level of awareness. And so then they were off, you know, and it engages all these other parts of the brain in movement, in learning, in emotion to, you know, to get us to that endpoint. And that's a lot of momentum. That whole system is still in place. So, but like, instead of walking 3 to 5 miles, you know, it's maybe up 3 feet to the fridge. We're triggered constantly. You know, we're triggered by, you know, commercials, by, you know, friends, by just memories, by smells, by sights. We are always in this state of, you know, dopamine, you know, arousal. And, you know, and it's not just with our food, you know, we see it in so many aspects. You know, these kids today, I mean, they are so inundated, mm-hmm. you know, with these triggers and with these, you know, reward seeking activities through their, I mean, not just kids, we are too, you know, our phones, our tablets, Twitter, you know, whatever it is, it's all the same. And you nailed it before by saying addictive, and that's exactly what it is. We did evolve to be addicted to finding food, and when we did, we maximized it by over consuming it. And here's the thing, it worked, and it's still working. So that's the scary part, is, you know, we can't control that, we can't change that, but we can change our environment. And that's, you know, that's one thing we can do, one thing that I work with families on.
Mm-hmm. And when we speak to kids, with kids, we know they're very impressionable, especially now we're seeing a lot of mm-hmm. statistics about body dysmorphia, disordered eating mm-hmm. with children, especially when it comes to social media influence. What are some do's and don'ts that we can do when it comes to talking to our children and being careful to use air quotes healthy and unhealthy?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a podcast in and of itself, right? Wow, yeah, you know, it's so tricky, you know. On first off, you know, raising healthy and healthy, I say that with air quotes, really raising confident and confident eaters is a process, and it's one of the first things I explain to parents. You know, we're so used to getting them to eat, especially when they're little. And then we want them to, you know, we want them to like the foods that they're innately not born to like. And we don't know, unless you understand this, you know, there are all these little evolutionary, you know, traps that we fall into as parents. But it's a journey that can go well into adulthood. And I use the comparison to learning to read. Same thing, you know, becoming a competent and confident eater requires first, you know, they have to learn. It has to be taught, just like learning to read. And then it requires a lot of practice and patience, and most important, perseverance. So where a lot of parents unknowingly kind of go off the rails early on, and it happens fast, you know, can happen as early as 12 months, 18 months, when our kids enter into a very normal stage. It's called food neophobia. I'm sure you're aware of it. You're a pediatric dietitian. And this is, you know, again, this is one of these little evolutionary traits that was once super beneficial to, you know, controlling little cave, you know, toddlers from putting poisonous berries in their mouths or whatnot. And it worked because it's wired, but it's a legitimate fear, and it's so poorly understood. And I even hear it a lot, even with some practitioners, because what we tend to do is we lump it, that in with other, you know, developmental, behavior of that developmental age. It's, you know, it's the terrible twos, or he's a picky eater. And we go about it by doing things like, you know, just take one bite. All of that is really just could be very, very traumatizing, because it is a fear. I mean, it's a legitimate fear. So when we coerce our kids to, you know, just take one bite, and it really just starts down this path. It's like a ball that just starts rolling, and mealtimes become a nightmare. Kids become distrustful, you know, especially if they're forced to have a bite of something that they're afraid of. And so that's, you know, that's one of those early missteps that, again, so many people take, and it's not their fault, you know. And it, you know, that we're trying to feed our kids, we want them to eat, and so it becomes very stressful for the parent, very stressful for the child, and so teaching, you know, families, parents, how to approach that, you know, you don't put anything on their plate, and you approach it by letting them watch you eat it. And, you know, that's how kids begin to trust certain foods, and hearing, you know, you talk about the food you're eating, but without, you know, any pressure for the child to eat it too. And again, they eventually will. It's just, it may not happen by the time they're three. You know, it's a journey. So, you know, there's going to be, you know, peaks and valleys, you know, you fall off, you get on, but it's just this, you know, again, it's perseverance and a lot of practice and a lot of understanding, very much with an innate preference for sweet and an innate dislike for bitter. It's just in their DNA. We're all born the same way. And, you know, they like what they like, and they know what they know. And so when we start saying things like, you know, that's not good for you, that's not healthy, it's very conflicting for the child, because they want to please their parents, but they're, you know, they're internalizing that they're doing something wrong, or something's not, they're, you know, they're bad, or, you know, they're, why do I like this food? And so, you know, the words we use around certain foods are also very, very important, because, you know, we have adult brains, you know, we can say this is better for you, or this is quote healthy, because we have that life experience, we have that knowledge, you know, but kids don't. And so it's all about empowering them to understand that, yeah, you know, you're supposed to like that, but, you know, here, let's broaden, you know, what that looks like, you know, let's not get stuck on it. And, you know, a huge part of that is, again, the home food environment and how it's constructed. And so if, you know, it's the other choices, but you got to have them in the house, you have to be, you know, walking the walk too. So, you know, being in the same field, there's a lot of nuances, and there are a lot of these little sort of, you know, rungs to this ladder to get to that point where, you know, kids are fairly self-moderated and, yes. You know, making, you know, pretty okay choices. I mean, we have to be realistic too. It's, you know, define healthy. You
know, like. Right, exactly. And I love that you use the word journey, and that's exactly why I call my business Baby Steps, because I know sometimes as parents, that. We could get so caught up in the moment and we put so much pressure and blame on ourselves. Like, my child is not eating and they're never going to be a good eater. And if I don't do this today, then tomorrow. But really, it's going back to, well, how do we want to develop lifelong, right? So it's those habits that are going to go a long way, and how we want them to be when they're adults and teenagers. And so they may be too and picky, but again, there are reasons behind that. So that's something I love to work with parents on. I've spoken out on is this child development and how important it is to understand what is happening in a child's brain and why they're doing those things that they do. And it's not about us. It's not about taking it personal, but it's just about what they're going through at that moment in time. So I love that you said journey, and I know that's something that's a mission of yours as well with Nutrition Nanny, is to empower families by a process. Absolutely. It's a journey. It's a commitment, but it's, you know, because you want to develop, again, those lifelong healthy habits. I'd love if you could talk us through Nutrition Nanny. What is it and how does it help families who are struggling?
So Nutrition Nanny is basically a platform that provides that journey. It's really, you know, I am a huge believer that, you know, primary prevention starts really, you know, even right before we get pregnant. So it's a journey that starts, you know, in pregnancy and then through the later adolescent years. Of course, it can keep going because, hey, aren't we still learning too? I
mean, yes,
it is a lifelong journey, but all the time. So what Nutrition Nanny does is it's a prevention and an intervention platform. We provide education, empowerment, and programs that help parents wherever they are in their stage of life. We have, you know, pregnancy programs to help teach mom and even in dad too, you know, about, you know, how, you know, they're hardwired too, and in helping them, helping mom with her diet, the importance of doing things like flavor bridging. You know, you can start right now by, you know, eating certain vegetables. There's an amazing study, the Monell Institute actually does a lot on this, but on this flavor bridging. And they found that, you know, moms who ate certain vegetables during pregnancy and breastfeeding, their babies had a quicker acceptance to them when they were introduced later on in infancy, when solids were introduced. So, you know, that's super fascinating. But even more so, you know, working with moms to overcome, you know, their own sort of eating issues in terms of, you know, listen, if you're, you know, picky eaters can easily become picky adults. So, yes. You know, you can make it fun. And so I have different, you know, ways that to encourage and inspire, you know, moms to, you know, take a second look at some of these choices. Pregnancy is also a time which there are a lot of these evolutionary they're evolutionary traits that helped, you know, us survive and bring a baby to term and then, you know, feed it afterwards. So it's still very much part of it. And, you know, the first one is, you know, obviously morning sickness, very normal and perfectly fine. And it's protective. And once upon a time, it probably saved a lot of moms from, you know, poisoning or ingesting, you know, some kind of a pathogen or and losing the baby. But then that second trimester when, you know, appetite, cravings, you know, again, that was very, very beneficial once upon a time because it drove moms out there to overconsume. So she had enough energy to, you know, continue with her pregnancy and then to actually, you know, lactate after. And, you know, these are things that are still with us. Mothers don't understand it, but they're powerful, powerful. You know, there it's powerful chemistry. And again, it involves the, you know, the reward center of the brain and motivation and dopamine, all that stuff. So, you know, working with moms in helping them make, you know, better choices and helping them manage their weight gain. So pregnancy is a huge space. There's so much we can do, just in those 9 months to set mom and especially her, set her baby up for better health after birth. And then, you know, from there, we go right into, you know, birth through, you know, A-team and hitting every developmental stage because there's, you know, there's a lot going on in every stage. So again, we have programs and we have services that help parents if they're concerned about, you know, one of our programs is called Nipped in the Bud because, what's nipped in the bud? It's, you know, stopping something before it really becomes a problem. So those are those sort of toddler years, those preschool years. By the time our kids are, you know, getting on the school bus for kindergarten, you know, the majority of their food preferences and eating habits for life have already been established. So such a critical window. And, you know, there's so much, you know, challenging parents to get through it. You know, we have, you know, a snack industry that never existed. It is a huge industry since really blown up since the 80s, you know, and, you know, that's a problem. We have toddler cuisine. And so, you know, our kids get, you know, they get, you know, that hyper palatability. It's hard to go backwards. So, you know, those early food introductions, and it's so important to just, you know, help them get off to, you know, a start that we have to, you know, reverse and now, you know, figure out and fix, which, you know, we do live in this knee-jerk system where, yeah, our prevention is, you know, your BMI is high, you know, that was managing. It's manageable, don't get me wrong, but it's just a lot easier if we can just kind of go through this continuum of, you know, preventing, managing, and mitigating these really key developmental stages in life. So, and totally. You know, right down to teens. I mean, I'm seeing with my own kids now that weren't challenges when I was, and I told you before, like DoorDash. Mm-hmm. You know, now they're, you know, at their own devices. They're really making their own choices. So, you know, it's a journey that really doesn't end.
Right. And I think this goes back to that knowledge and support our power, because we know it's there. We know they're being enticed, they're being marketed towards, it's convenient, mm-hmm. right? We know it's everywhere. But this is where I feel, and I've struggled with this as a parent, because there are so many mm-hmm. things I would want for kids, but I know it's a tug of war. So at least mm-hmm. if I can try to give them that knowledge and give them that power so that they know when they have choices that they can make the better choice, mm-hmm. then I feel absolutely. Like maybe I've yep. done my job well.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of even just, you know, the food industry and navigating that whole, you know, that whole situation, I think, you know, kids are consumers too. When they understand, you know, how these foods are formulated, it's super empowering. You know, we do fun exercises with kids because, you know, a lot of kids, they don't understand satiety signaling. You know, it's something that's, as you know, it's developed very early in life. So they relate to, you know, being full as really when they're stuffed. So it's kind of, you know, going back and sort of training and practicing and being more mindful of eating and being mindful of what they're eating. And I think, you know, a huge problem we have right now is ultra processed foods, which comprise, you know, over 60% of our kids' calories. And these are chemically concocted. They have very, you know, poor nutritional value. And, you know, it's really, you know, the majority of our kids' diet. So, you know, the food industry, I think, you know, they will never be an agent of change. You know, they are, you know, they're out, you know, they're out to make money. That's, you know, not to, you know, make everyone healthy, but I believe they will change if that's where consumer demand, you know, drives it. And I think the food industry would love to work with advocacy groups. I don't think any executive, you know, is particularly thrilled that, you know, we're heading towards a future in which, you know, we're going to have, you know, 60 something percent of, you know, of the, you know, working the most in their prime Americans, you know, just having, you know, major health crises because of obesity. So I don't think they are particularly happy, but they need, I think they need ways to do it in such a way that, you know, it's going to support, you know, their stockholders and business. So, I mean, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that big food will move with health trends. We just need to, you know, get consumers, the parents, and all of us really on board with what are we eating, what is it doing to our body, and how do we start making better for you choices that will drive the food industry to change.
Totally. And if there are families, caregivers that are struggling, know that there are support services out there, so you don't have to do this alone. Absolutely. Deidre, speaking of, where can our listeners find out more about you and the work that you're doing?
I can be reached at www.nutritionnanny.com. So it's pretty easy. And head on over.
Awesome. And a lot of the great links that you mentioned throughout this episode, I will absolutely include them in the show notes for our listeners.
Great.
Deidre, I want to thank you so much for being here to discuss. It's really a major public health issue. As we know, obesity and poor health doesn't just affect our physical health, but it impacts our mental health also.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
And I hope we can keep the conversation going. And as you said, develop some partnerships between advocacy groups and decision makers, change agents to really get Absolutely. To the heart of, you know, we want to get our kids as healthy as possible because they really are our future.
It's so true. And thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been great. This has been a really great conversation, and I would absolutely love to continue it as well.
For sure. So to the listeners, stay tuned for more conversations between Deirdre and I. And to the listeners, thank you as always for tuning in. Until next time. Thank you for listening to the Baby Steps Nutrition Podcast with your host, Argavan Nilforush. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into all the tips and tricks you and your family can use to make daily life a little easier. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, please leave a rating and review, share with others, and follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Baby Steps Nutrition Podcast. As always, you can head over to babystepsnutrition.com to sign up for our email list, as well as check out all the links and resources in the show notes. See you next time. Tune in. Feel great.